Go talk to the geniuses that are online.
Recorded during the Colts-Titans Monday Night Football game, it's time to Belichick your premises. And if you enjoy the checking of your premises here today, please tell a friend. That's how we get more people to check their premises, and we get to have an even better conversation about football. And maybe if we change things enough one day, the rules of football will get better. And joining me to talk about that, you already heard his reaction there. Daniel T. Richards, how are you doing, Daniel? Did you enjoy a good week six here?
Good week six, quality football, some teams starting to make their moves, some teams that maybe looked bad early on start to show their true colors and good, and vice versa. All awesome. And you know what's especially wonderful on a Sunday when you have a cold? Is just being able to sit back on the couch, wrap up in a blanket, and have your dog chew on your foot. Oh, and watch football. That's the part.
You've just given many men in America the out to be able to watch football every Sunday. Mysteriously, every Saturday night, they will start not to feel well. And then Sunday morning, they will have a cold and not be able to get up off the couch.
That's right. The Sunday afternoon flu.
When you're talking about these teams and everything sort of starting to shake out, it's interesting that you say that because everything kind of moved towards the middle now. I mean,
yes.
The Chiefs are 5-1, and then like everyone else in the league is 4-2, right? Or are the Eagles? No, the Eagles, they've lost two games as well, I think.
Lots of 4-2s, lots of 3s, sort of middle of the road everywhere. Everything started to sort of converge, which is how things go. All these, we talked about this early on in the last episode, these narratives about which team are good and which aren't. There aren't enough data points yet. So we're getting more and more data points. We're starting to see some trends just barely emerge, but it's a 16-game season for a reason.
Right, and of course, Belichick has a quote about this in a press conference, or it might have been a conference call after the game on Monday. He had a quote about this, because remember, the Patriots had these ridiculous expectations, right? They had that
perfect season.
Right, perfect season after having that ridiculous comeback. And everyone thought, you know, they would just keep rolling after the Super Bowl. But he said, so each year you start all over again. You start that process all over again. You build your team over the course of the year through practice repetition, through preseason to regular season games, through the evolving of your scheme. That's why each year is different and unique. But I understand I'm in the minority and most other people don't see it that way, which is okay. But that's how I see it. So first, before we even talk football, I just want to say from like a rational self-esteem point of view, his perspective is exactly the perspective you should have. And I'm not even going to lie. It's one I struggle with. This idea that, but I understand I'm in the minority and most other people don't see it that way, which is okay. Accepting that you're outside the norm, but you're okay with that. I mean, it sounds ridiculous to have Belichick say it because he's in the minority, obviously. But obviously, maybe he shouldn't be in the minority, because if we were a little bit more like Belichick, we'd all be successful.
If we were all a little bit more like Belichick, we'd have a lot heavier hands.
That is the episode title, so remember that so you can tell it to me after the show. Mm-hmm. But, so that's the first thing for Russia, and I get it. Like, I'm that way with art, right? Like, I just saw Happy Death Day, and I love the movie, and I see people belittling it. And I understand that I'm in the minority about it, but it's still difficult to be that way. So from a rational perspective, I just think that he's demonstrating that right there.
Yes, he's basically, if you want to parse out the sentence to no end, it's, look, the majority out there may have a different opinion about how the team should be, but I've kind of done it for all these years. Oh, sub-premise, I'm really fucking good at it. So I have a different perspective, and I'm completely fine with that.
Right, that's what he's saying with, but that's okay.
Yes.
In fact, there's probably a sub premise in there. Oh, it's completely okay if you want to have the wrong perspective, because that means I'm going to win more.
That's right. You can have the wrong perspective. But this is another thing, you know, an additional side note of just being in the minority here, you know, with opinion or whatnot. It's also that he's not trying to be a people pleaser. It's not just that he's in the minority. It's that I don't particularly want to pander to the majority who are, you know, I'll just say it, ignorant here. I don't need to pander. We're fine. Like, he didn't say any of this, but, you know, this is basically like, well, the football team is where it should be. It's not the greatest yet, but it's getting better. Things are improving. We're working on our weaknesses and bolstering our strengths.
And that's the football side of it, is people, including me, have been really worried about this defense. And there's still cause for concern, especially in the secondary. Granted, they were missing two players. Stephon Gilmore and Eric Rowe were out with injury. Stephon Gilmore is, of course, the guy we paid a lot of money. But there have been blown coverages by the secondary all season. But then you look at the past two games. Now, granted, they were playing the Buccaneers and the Jets, so we have to take that into account. But they did the thing where they gave up a lot of yards and not a lot of points again. And that's typical Belichick clock-killing defense. I mean, they gave up 17 points to the Jets, and how many points to the Buccaneers? Was it 16?
16 or 13, something like that.
Right. Yeah. So if you're talking points scored against, the defense looked pretty good the past 2 weeks, and the pass rush has been there. They've gotten pressure when they needed to. So I see what he's saying about the improvement. I mean, right, this is the time. Let's talk about the Patriots versus the Chiefs. The Chiefs came out really, really hot, and they won their first five games. But as we say, it's always about getting better each month, or as Belichick says, it's about getting better each month. The Patriots, meanwhile, struggled. They lost two games in September. But now October comes in. We're in the division lead. We just beat a division team to take a lead over them, whereas the only reason the Chiefs are really in the division lead right now is their not only is their division lost games, but they all lost except for the Chargers, because they played an intra-division game. They all lost this past weekend. So who's trending better? Now, granted, it's one game, but that's not the way you want to trend going into October.
Right. I think a big test to see the progress of the secondary and how it translates to points allowed will be this coming week for the Patriots, who are playing the Falcons. Remember those guys? Remember what they did in the air in the Super Bowl? And I think the secondary is going to really have to step it up. This is the game where I think they're going to have to decide who they are as players. So it'll be interesting to see. The Falcons had a bad game this week. Lost to Miami, the team where Jay Cutler is the quarterback. Just want to point that out.
Well, they didn't just lose. So this is something interesting that I learned today. I read it was actually an article on NFL.com. So that's, you know, that's not a completely worthless site. They were up 17-0 at halftime. Did you know that? Yes. That in every game the Falcons have played so far this season, they've had a lead and almost given it up, or did give it up to lose?
It's that whole full game thing, man. As much as I worry about the Patriots, and you and I talk at halftime of every game, as much as I'm panicking, the Patriots play a full game every single time, and many teams do not. And the Falcons have had this plague them. So, I don't know. They're still a pretty scary team, especially in the air. So I'm a little worried about that secondary.
Oh, yeah, completely a scary team. But the point is, this isn't just a full game thing. This is the fact that it's the Falcons. That was their one major weakness. Like, literally, if they had fixed that one thing, they would have won the Super Bowl. So wouldn't that be the thing you would focus on? Do everything else the same, but just change that? Yet they've seemed to have gone backwards in that way.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how they progress for the rest of the season, if they get better or worse. But let's talk about the controversy from the Patriots game, because we can't go a week without a controversy and a whole, if this one thing had been different, the Patriots would have lost scenario.
Right, which if you have a problem with that logic and you're still using that logic, go check out our last episode. That's where we address that one.
So the Jets drove down the field and looked like they were going to put a touchdown on the board to make it a three-point game, right? Because they were down by 10. McGowan throws a touchdown pass looks like a touchdown pass to their tight end.
Safarian Jenkins, who's huge, yes. And we had trouble covering all game.
Yes. As he's crossing the goal line, he loses control of the ball, and then he still does not have control of the ball as he goes out of bounds, at which time he regains control of the ball. First, it's ruled a touchdown, but after official review, it's ruled that he fumbled the ball across the end zone and then out of bounds, which results in a touchback, and the Patriots get the ball. That's how that works. So, the announcers during the game were just wildly confused by this call. They had no idea how you could possibly make this reversal, and basically said there wasn't evidence, despite the fact that there are photos showing the ball completely out of Safarian Jenkins' hands. And then all the commentators afterwards also were playing Monday morning quarterback for the officials, saying that this was an absurd call. Justin, first, what do you think about the call in general? Did the refs get the call right? Let's talk about that, because that's the first element of this.
Well, I'll address that, but the first thing I want to say is Dan Fouts is like complained by the back of a cereal or confused by the back of a cereal box, so I wouldn't take his confusion as any sort of representation of what an intelligent person thinks.
Fouts-y. Yeah. I won't.
Yeah, Fouts is like, Fouts was always the poor man's Deardorff, and when Deardorff retired, it was like, yes, but then it was like, it made us realize how bad Fouts is. So if we could get rid of him soon, that would be nice. I mean, think about
it. What a nickname, the poor man's Deardorff. But that is a nickname right there.
But think about it. Now that we have Tony Romo, like, how could you listen to Dan Fouts in a game?
I hate it. It's horrible. Every time I listen to anyone other than Tony Romo, I'm just wildly disappointed. It's just blather. Literally, the word blather was invented to describe what these football announcers do. Just blah, blah, blah.
And it's what the other guys in the bar do too, right? So I'm sitting there, and you know, to talk about the call, and I'm in a tough position. Because I think that should have been a touchdown, but I know the rule was called correctly. So if I say anything to disagree, because obviously everyone else in the bar thinks it's a touchdown, right? They don't think the rule was called correctly. They're like, that's a touchdown. So if I say anything to disagree, they just call me a homer. I start talking. They go, all right, but you're a Patriots fan. I go, let me finish. I go, I want that to be a touchdown because I think in the spirit of the game that that is a touchdown, that he achieved what he is trying to achieve to prove he can score a touchdown. But if you look at the rules, they're saying that he bobbles it. And then when he recovers it, he's out of bounds. So therefore, because he didn't maintain recovery until he's out of bounds, or didn't regain recovery until he's out of bounds, it's a touchback. So as the rule is written, I believed in the bar that it was a touchback based on the rules.
I said it immediately.
Right. I said that immediately. I understood what they were going for. And then Tony Corrente, this is what he said after the game or the next day or whenever. This is a direct quote from him explaining it. The final shot that we saw was from the end zone that showed the New York Jets runner, we'll call him a runner at that point, with the football starting to go toward the ground. He lost the ball. It came out of his control as he was almost to the ground. Now he regressed the ball, and by rule, now he has to complete the process of recovery, which means he has to survive to the ground again. So in recovering it, he recovered, hit the knee, started to roll, and the ball came out a second time. So the ball started to move in his hands this way. He's now out of bounds in the end zone, which now created a touchback. So he didn't survive the recovery and didn't survive the ground during the recovery is what happened here. So what they're saying is when he bobbled the ball, he no longer had possession. And then he had to regain possession, which he didn't do until he was out of bounds because he bobbled it a second time when he hit the ground. That is the rule, and that is as written. So we can't argue, just like the Tuck rule, and I know this is going to piss a lot of people off because we're Patriots fans, but that was the rule as written. It was a stupid, shitty rule, but it was as written. Same thing here. Yes. This is as written, and the ref is clearly explaining it. And let's be clear here. He started to bobble the ball before he crossed the goal line. Because if he crossed the goal line and then bobbled it, the play would have been dead when he hit the goal line, and it would have been a touchdown.
Right. So this is a good excuse, basically, to talk about rules. And why, like, first, abstractly, why sports have rules in general, and then, two, what makes a good rule. Because literally went the moment he started to cross the goal line, I said aloud, he lost control of the ball. That's a fumble. So the rule as written, I think, was clearly called. But that being said, I think the rule is a terrible rule.
Well, I think actually, aren't there two terrible rules here?
Maybe. What do you mean specifically? What are you
saying? Well, there's the fumble rule, and then the rule as far as out the back of an end zone is a touchback. And what I mean by that is he bobbled the ball, right?
Yes.
Is that a fumble?
Not just bobble. I mean, if you look at the still photos, the ball is 100% out of his hands at a couple points.
Correct. I agree with that. But no one else touched the ball, and he regressed it. So
yes,
if he was making a catch, I would 100% agree incomplete. He never established control. But he caught the ball and then ran and then bobbled it twice. So to me, he had possession the whole time. He just didn't maintain a firm grasp on it.
Right.
So in reality, if I have something and then I, you know, let me put it this way. So if I'm walking down the stairs and I like have a package and I bobble the package and it falls and I catch it again before it hits the ground, the package never really left my possession. I always had it in my possession. I just potentially lost it. So even though he bobbled it a couple times, to me, because he had established control early on, he already proved the ball was his. So I think that's a poor fumble ruling right there. And then there's the stupid touchback rule.
Oh, that kills me. It kills me. It is a ridiculous punishment for basically nothing. It is the ultimate consequence, which is that you don't get points and your opponents get the ball for a minor error, what appears to be. And I forget which team this was, but a few years ago, there's a running back and he dove across the end zone and like a micron before the ball touches the white line, he opens his hands and he and the ball cross the goal line together, but his hands aren't touching it. Before he touches the ground, he grabs the ball again. But then he, you know, rolls and it goes out the back of the end zone, and they called it a fumble out of the back of the end zone.
Right. It's basically the same play because he never reestablished.
Basically the same play, except that he like purposely dove to sort of like be entertaining and acrobatic, but like he just barely lets go of the ball right before they cross into the end zone together, which is a fumble out of the back of the end zone. And the other team gets the ball. I even forget what team it was. It wasn't the Patriots. It wasn't anyone I liked. I was fucking ripshit because that is a terrible, terrible rule. Terrible. Now, what makes a good rule? Well, first of all, why do sports have rules? Why can't we just do whatever the hell we want?
Well, let's use the example of this touchback rule to talk about this. So before you go into your abstract stuff, let's ground this a little bit. The purpose of this rule is if you drive the entire field and then fumble it out of bounds in the back of the end zone, they're saying that you've gone as far as you can with possession of the ball and couldn't maintain possession, therefore the other team gets the ball. But the reason this is non-objective is if I'm running and I'm at the 5 and I fumble it to the out of bounds, the other team doesn't get the ball.
Right. Exactly.
We keep it. The only way the other team gets the ball is if they regain possession of a fumble, if they gain possession of a fumble in bounds. If their leg is out of bounds and they try to gain possession, it still goes to the original team who had the ball, the offense.
Right.
So this is the one time where when you fumble it, it goes out of the back end zone. That's the one time they don't have to recover it to get the ball. That's non-objective.
Yes. To take it one abstraction, so not too much more abstraction, the way another team gets the ball is they have to earn it in some way. So they either have to physically take it from you in a certain sense, or they have to stop you from moving 4 times. And then they have earned the ball. In this one instance, they theoretically do nothing to earn that. They could knock it loose or whatever, but you know, in most cases that's not what happens.
Right. So let's not say they did nothing. Let's say they don't do the equivalent of what they would have to do otherwise. So even if you knock it out otherwise, you'd have to gain possession.
Yes, exactly. They don't necessarily have to do anything to still earn, or I mean not earn, to get the possession. They don't have to earn it in this instance. So that's why I don't think this is a good rule, because it's not actually rewarding the opposing team for an action they took. it's rewarding another team for an accident, basically, which I think you want to, in terms of good rules for sport, you want to reduce those kinds of rules as much as possible. You want to supplement rules that reward the other team for the positive action they take and diminish rules that reward them for non-action or for accidents or for flukes, things that involve luck, series of luck. So,
well, so then Andrew rules, Luck can never do anything? Is that what you're saying?
Well, so far this season, that's right.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is he playing tonight? Like, is he alive? Like, where is Andrew Luck?
He's alive. He had to have reconstructive surgery, I think. So he's basically relearning a throwing motion, which has got to be insanely difficult, right?
Wait, did he have reconstructive surgery or a stroke?
Well, the way he's looking at the tablet right now on TV, I'm not sure. Oh, it's a radio. No wonder. He's young. He has no idea how a radio works. Okay, that makes more sense. Okay.
Why isn't this a podcast?
That's right. So poor guy. And we'll talk about.
But he doesn't know
how
technology works anyway, because he's Amish, right? With that beard.
Yeah, totally. He is the nicest guy in football too, for being a, you know. Oh, did you see that? I know this is a podcast. Good pod. The Colts have a little person, ball man, getting the footballs. Did you see that?
Wait, it's Peter Dinklage? Is that what you're saying?
Could be a relative. I don't know how that works.
Is Brad Williams? Brad Williams?
Yeah. And it's a little person, right? That's the politically correct term, even though it sounds like the most fucking offensive term you could possibly imagine. That is the politically correct term.
Well, you say little person. So, I'm like, what's the difference? You mean an 8-year-old boy? Like, it doesn't work in this capacity.
Yeah, it's true. That's funny. Okay, anyway. Just super briefly.
So you didn't answer my question. Is he playing or not? Oh. Is Jacoby Brissett playing?
Oh, he's not playing. Okay. Jacoby Brissett is playing.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think he's back for at least another week.
Ever. Okay, look. Somebody fight me on this or bet me on this. If we see Andrew Luck play again as a starter in the NFL, I will be shocked.
Really? I don't think it's that bad.
You just told me he's relearning how to throw the football, dude. Like, come on.
He is. I think they'll give him a chance. I'm not saying he'll be good, but I think he will start again.
Oh, he may start 1 to 5 games, but
it would take an incredible, incredible feat for him to be at the level he was before. And he wasn't even that great. He wasn't that great.
Yeah, he was a lot of hype. And do you want to keep talking about the rules? We do have a natural transition here for injured, overhyped quarterbacks.
I guess maybe we can get into the philosophy of rulemaking on a different podcast. I think we covered rules, this rule in particular, pretty well, but
right. And the idea,
we want to get into the philosophy of rulemaking.
Just to sum it up, I think what you're saying is the philosophy of rulemaking is just to make sure that you're objectively measuring the skill that's being contested and that the people who are doing it are properly proving they're earning to say they're
right.
Better.
And unless it's a game of chance, like roulette, you want to minimize benefit from chance situations. So, okay.
Right, and minimizing, luck and minimizing benefit from chance situations, like fans cheering injuries of other players.
Ugh, narratives. This is a fan narrative that needs to fucking die, okay? So, unless you live under an NFL rock, you have heard that Aaron Rodgers is now out for the season for the Green Bay Packers. He had surgery today on a broken collarbone.
Oh, is it confirmed for
Aaron
the season?
Rodgers, well, he had surgery today. I don't think there's any way you come back from that.
Right, because what happened was, now you, when you watch the game, you only watch the Patriots game, right?
When I'm watching the Patriots game, I don't watch. I mean, I will sometimes flip to the Red Zone channel during commercials, but yeah.
Okay, so I
didn't see anything.
Right,
yeah.
So I go to a sports bar to watch the game. The only person there not drinking, but actually, it's at 10 a.m. in California, so it's me and this Minnesota Vikings fan usually there, unless there's an Angels game that people go to pregame for there. But yeah, so it was me and, we'll ignore the obnoxious anti-Patriots guy, but we'll pretend it was just me and the Vikings fan. And I pay attention to that game because he's pretty passionate about it. And I'm like, yeah, I like you, dude. Like, yeah, I'm glad to see somebody supporting the Vikings not in Minnesota. Like, you don't see that very often. Unless you're talking about Marshall and How I Met Your Mother living in New York City. You don't see a lot of displaced Vikings fans. So I see it, and I see Aaron Rodgers go down on his shoulder. And then they're like, Aaron Rodgers got carted off. And I'm like, but he went down on his shoulder. Like, Tom Brady blew out his knee, and he walked off with help. But he still walked off. I mean, Edelman, with help, walked off. So it's very strange to me. And then I start seeing on the ticker, broken collarbone. Because my original thought was like, remember Garoppolo got hit by Cameron Wake of the Dolphins? And he just sprained his shoulder. It was a jam. I was like, oh, okay, maybe he just has a sprain. That's me bargaining, right? Because I don't want to see Aaron Rodgers get hurt. I want to see Tom Brady beat Aaron Rodgers in the Super Bowl so we can put that shit to rest. And then it And then it comes out, they think he may not miss the season, which is basically code for the entire Packers organization is in the bargaining stage of grief.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that was my experience with the injury.
Sorry, my dog is making the strangest noise I have ever heard. I think he's dreaming. I don't think you can hear it on the podcast.
No, but
it sounds something like this.
We had to get
like
the dog.
I have a mini walrus.
Yeah, and we had to get the dog noise in because on the main show, your dog was actually very, very noisy. It sounded like he was trying to escape, like you had buried him somewhere, and like he was trying to dig his way out at one point.
Yeah, I need a new solution for the dog that is not a final solution. I need a new solution because just putting him away now and giving him peanut butter only keeps him quiet for about half a minute, and then it's all noise after that. So,
well, if you break his collarbone, he will be out of commission for the rest of the Belichick Your Premises pod. So that's an option.
That's right. Dog out for the season. Then I'm going to take care of a broken collarbone dog, which would not be fun. I am not Olivia Munn. So,
she doesn't have to anymore. They're not together.
Oh, they're not?
No.
Man, I don't keep up on my celebrity dating
news.
This
is why it's sad
Did
for
he come
the
out
Packers.
Yet, Aaron Rodgers? No. Okay. It is sad for the Packers. Especially the fudge Packers. Okay, never mind. So, the whole injury thing. I just saw it on a news ticker thing, and then you texted me and you were like, you used an exclamation point, which means you're basically frantic. That's how I know. And my immediate response to almost any injury, even players I haven't heard of, but especially to players in their prime and players as talented as Rodgers, is like the pit of my stomach just falls out. I don't want to throw up, but it's like almost like a dread feeling. I hate it. I hate hearing about it.
Are you sure this isn't a traumatic reenactment on your part? Because the second game you ever watched was Brady blowing out his knee.
It may very well be. that is true. I hate hearing about it. I hate when it happens. I feel so bad for that person, whoever it is, and then of course for their loved ones, and then for the fan base. But especially because I have a similar reaction to you, which is I don't shy away from greatness. I want greatness to play greatness. I want Tom Brady to play Aaron Rodgers in the Super Bowl. I want them to face off because we haven't had enough of those games. For as long as these two quarterbacks have been in the league together, we have just not had enough of those games. These are two of the greatest quarterbacks in history. The greatest and then one who's still earning it. I'll let you figure out who those are based on context. And we should, as football fans, need to see more of that, not less.
Well, I think the last time the Patriots played the Packers, Matt Flynn was quarterback, wasn't he? Because wasn't Rodgers hurt again?
Oh, maybe. I'm not sure. I don't remember that, but need more of that. So
I mean, look, we're probably never going to see a Brady-Rodgers Super Bowl now.
No, we're probably not. Probably not. Next year, maybe. Last chance, but we'll see. So I go to social media because I want to confirm that he's out for the season because that's effing terrible. And I did the worst possible thing, just go to Twitter.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And search for Aaron Rodgers.
That's like a twist on the Mike Birbiglia joke. What I should have did was nothing. What I did do was go to Twitter.
Go to Twitter. And my God, just the horrific comments celebrating his injury. basically lots of those stupid fucking party hats and emojis and whatnot, and the smiley faces like, oh, thank goodness he's injured, and couldn't have happened to a douchier guy, lots of those kind of things. And then you transition to the people who are like, well, at least now my team has a chance in the NFC, which is slightly better, I think, because it's just sort of acknowledging a reality as opposed to celebrating an injury, which is... So this is one of these, we talk a lot about media narratives, but fan narratives, sometimes just as bad, and this is one of them. Do not celebrate injuries. That is one of the worst possible things you can do as another human being, is to wish harm or celebrate harm when it comes upon people who are genuinely good people just trying to do their job.
I'm not...
I mean, Aaron Rodgers was not leading a Tiki Torch Nazi rally in Charlottesville, okay? He's a genuinely good human being.
I don't know. He is white and lives in Wisconsin.
Immediately suspect. But I don't know what you think.
His old quarterback does endorse Wrangler jeans.
Okay. Oh.
No, Jesus. You're really laying on the gay jokes. It's not even me. Usually that's for me. That's for you this time. No, look, I
think Aaron Rodgers is gay.
You think he's gay legitimately?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't really think about his sexuality, so.
Someone asked me once if I thought Aaron Rodgers was gay, and I said if I had to pick a quarterback who I thought was gay, it'd probably be Aaron Rodgers. So, I'm sticking with it. I don't back down. No spin zone.
We
here.
All wanted it to be Tony Romo, just for the ease of it. But
doesn't he have the gajillion kids? Oh, no, that's
Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers.
Yeah, that's because Philip Rivers has been having kids since he was in college. But no, we all wanted to be Tony Romo, but at least it was the guy on the Packers.
That's right.
No, I mean, look, exactly. I could lie, but I do, it is my second thought. Like, my first thought is, shit, that really sucks. Like, fuck, Aaron Rodgers is out. Actually, it was my third thought. My first thought was, fuck, he's out. My second thought was, well, I guess the Vikings won this game. And then my third thought is, well, that eliminates the Packers. And I do think, oh, that makes it easier for the Patriots to win the Super Bowl. Because, there's not really, who else in the NFC really scares me? The Seahawks, because we just can't fucking play them. But, I think we can beat anybody else. And the Giants aren't going to make the Super Bowl at this point. So it's like, I don't really fear anyone in the NFC at this point. I don't.
What are you saying? I think the Giants are going undefeated the rest of the season.
God.
They're going 11-5.
I hate you so much.
Come on. Now, you talked last week, or we did talk last week, about how does Tom Brady, where does he go from here? Tom Brady versus the Giants again is where we go from here.
Okay,
he
fine.
Beats them again.
Fine. If that happens, fine. But you get my point, though. So I think, on some level, how it benefits my team. I'm not going to, pretend I don't. Maybe I'm
sure.
A terrible human being.
There's a difference between a matter of factness about, oh, this, this makes it easier for other teams, and, oh, man, thank God he's hurt, or, woohoo, Aaron Rodgers is injured. That kind of thing is so, to me, so ignorant and ridiculous. How much does it take that much empathy as a human being to think oh, this could happen to someone that I admire. This could happen to someone on the team that I root for.
Well, again, maybe
what
it's just because
we've
been through this.
What kind of wild narcissism does it take? Yeah. Yeah, maybe. But what kind of wild narcissism does it take to be completely unaware that this could happen at any moment to someone that you care about or on a team that you root for?
That is a much
ridiculous.
Different conversation. And if you want to hear more about that, that's on the main show. We talk about that stuff all the time. But I would say that that's a symptom of our overall culture. Sort of what I want to add on to this is part of why I think that eliminates the Packers is I always look for with every team the thing that eliminates them.
Sure.
So let me give you an example. The Texans. I love the Texans this year because I love Deshaun Watson. They're a good team. But there's two things to me that have possibly eliminated them. The first is it's very rare for a rookie quarterback to do that well in the playoffs. So I just think this probably isn't their year because they have a rookie quarterback. If anyone's going to prove me wrong, it's Deshaun Watson. But also, when they had the big injuries on defense 2 weeks ago, Merciless and Watt going out, I was like, okay, that's probably it for the Texans. So I always look for things like that that are going to prove that a team's not going to, this isn't going to be their year. That's what I worry about with the Patriots, is their weak secondary proof that they're not going to win it this year.
Yeah. Well, it's hard because quarterback is a position where, I mean, what team could lose their quarterback and it not be it for the year? I mean, assuming...
Right, we saw this with Derek Carr last year.
Yeah, so it's hard, right? Because, yeah, of course, losing Aaron Rodgers, top three quarterback in the league right now, is going to ruin your year. Unless your backup turns out to be the fucking next Tom Brady. See, I didn't say next Aaron Rodgers. It's difficult. So, like, people thought, for instance, that losing Gronkowski was the end of the year for the Patriots last year, but they proved that that was not the case. They have gone undefeated without Gronkowski. So maybe sit him once in a while. But just kidding. Please don't.
They do that, but that's a discussion for another episode.
Yeah, so it's hard. This is Dave Damashek calls this the Jenga theory of football, which is which piece you remove and the whole thing comes out. I hate Jenga, so I rarely say that. Stupid, mindless party game that you can only is good when you're drunk. And even then, it's sort of mediocre. Because you have to pick up all the pieces. So
that sounds like an accurate description of this show, doesn't it?
Good when you're drunk.
Mediocre even when you're drunk, and then you have to, after you try and put together all the pieces, pick them up.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk shit about this show because of that, Where can people reach you to talk shit about your contributions to this mediocre show?
Let's see. I have enough Twitter followers. So why don't you shoot me a message over on Instagram. Instagram @ Daniel T. Richards.
Slide into his DMs. Shoot your shot.
Right. That's right. @ Daniel T. Richards on Instagram. You can go there.
All right. And if you want to reach me, I'm on all of the social medias. Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook. That's pretty much it, so I don't mean all of them. Vero, if you know that one, @ The Midside. That's where I promote all of the main show that we do, Welcome to the Midside, which you can find also at themidside.com, themidside.com/podcast. Or if you're finding this in our iTunes feed, just scroll to one of the other episodes that doesn't say Belichick Your Premises, and you can listen to our main show. We've been talking a lot recently about the Harvey Weinstein scandal. So if you want to hear more about that, click over to one of those other episodes. Thanks for checking in with us on this show. For now, we're on to the Atlanta Falcons.
My face, your face, instant face, go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.